everyone, this is Molly Douthat.
And David Douthat.
Welcome to More Than Hearing, a podcast to encourage preachers to use multiple intelligences in sermons and worship leadership, because there are plenty of ways to reach someone's soul.
Today we are covering Math and Body Smart for the lectionary selections for the fourth Sunday in Epiphany, or Ordinary Time, Year C. God calls Jeremiah by putting words in his mouth. Psalm 71 calls God a refuge and a rescuer. The epistle is the love chapter in 1 Corinthians, and Jesus' hometown crowd doesn't like what he's throwing down, so they want to throw him down. But we'll try to lift you up with some multiple intelligence goodies for your preaching.
This podcast is based on Dr. Howard Gardner's theory of multiple intelligences. Dr. Gardner suggests that there are multiple ways to learn, process, remember, and understand our world. Each week, centered on the weekly readings of the Revised Common Lectionary, we develop illustrations and special effects using various smarts based on Dr. Gardner's identified intelligences. Over the course of 4 weeks, we will cover word smart, eye smart, math smart, body smart, music smart, nature smart, people smart, and self smart. You could read more about Dr. Gardner's work by clicking at the link at the top of our webpage, morethanhearing.org.
Join us as we explore ways these intelligences can be utilized for a deeper appreciation of God's Word. Then we encourage you to try it yourself. Anytime and any way we can make use of the different smarts, we give people greater access to the Word of God so they can acquire it, process it, and internalize it in ways that make sense to them. Let's get started.
Hey everyone, we are in Ocean City, Maryland. We have an opportunity to be here for a couple of days this week, so we are doing a remote broadcast, coming to you live from the 8th floor of a hotel, listening to the wind and the waves.
Yay.
So if there's a little bit of background noise, that's what it is. No gulls, it's too cold.
Yeah.
Well, so as we David already mentioned, we are doing math and body smart for this particular podcast. I'll be looking at math smart, and we've been going to Diana Waring, who is an educator who has also been looking at Howard Gardner's theory of multiple intelligences in the classroom, and looking at her and some of her understandings and descriptions of what these intelligences are. So she says that folks who are math smart are people who are good with numbers and or logic, whether it's in math itself, any sort of science or engineering particularly. These people have the ability to reason mathematically, discover abstract patterns, classify and organize. They enjoy mathematical computations, and they think logically. Think Spock when you think of
absolutely.
Math people. Or Sheldon Cooper.
Yes, yes.
This person needs to see the logic and the organization of what is being taught them. So you need to keep that in mind if you choose to use math intelligence.
I'm doing body smart, and again, Diana Waring says that this is someone who is, more formal name for this is kinesthetic intelligence, or bodily kinesthetic, and this is someone who is good with movement, whether large or small motor skills, so things like athletics, dance, and maybe jewelry making, getting into the fine motor skills.
Mm-hmm.
This is the ability to use one's body through touch and movement to accomplish what is desired. It includes being able to process knowledge through bodily movement or through sensation, enjoying physical activity and being constantly in motion, even while sitting down. This person needs to move. Close quote. So that's what we're looking at this week as we take a look at the texts.
Again, this week, we're going to begin with the gospel, which for this Sunday is Luke chapter 4, verses 21 through 30. We are picking up immediately where we left off last week. As a matter of fact, we're even having a little bit of an overlap. The verse that starts today's passage is the one that ended last week's. Then he began to say to them, "Today this scripture has been fulfilled in your hearing."
Well, that's nice. It kind of, everybody's, wow, very amazed at him, at the words that have come out of his mouth. But then they start saying to each other, well, isn't this Joseph's son? And Jesus catches wind of that and begins to kind of push back on them. Doubtless you'll quote to me this proverb, doctor, cure yourself. And he seems to suggest that they are wondering who he is. And having heard of all the wonderful things he's been doing, what's he going to do for them? Because they've got this special relationship with him. And so he counters that by telling about two particular instances from their ancient past where God's grace and God's mercy and God's healing went outside the boundaries of Israel. So they get a little cranky of that. And as a matter of fact, it's a little more than cranky. They're filled with rage. So they get up, they drive him out, and they try to throw him off a cliff. But somehow or another, he passes through the midst of them and walks away.
Yeah, that's got to be one of the most mysterious verses in all of Scripture.
And I'm not touching it in Math Smart, because there ain't no logic in that. So for Math Smart, again, thinking about logic and numbers and formulas and things like that, we both of us got to wondering, what is this about anger? Why did they get so angry? And so I looked up, I literally Googled the phrase, the logic of anger. Mm-hmm. And I came up with a couple of different things. Running up to it a bit. There's something called a recalibrational theory. I found this at the website for Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences of the United States. That says anger is produced by a neurocognitive program that functions in our brains that is engineered by natural selection to use bargaining tactics to resolve conflicts of interest in favor of the angry individual. So we're hardwired when we get upset about something to look for the advantage. What?
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's a hardwired program in our brains that gets us to look for the ways that we can benefit out of that. Scientist that was quoted somewhere in the midst of all of this stuff, I was scrolling it and I forgot to actually cite where it was, a man named Jerry Deffenbacher says that when we get angry, we appraise a situation, when we appraise a situation as blameworthy, unjustified, or punishable. If we feel that we're being pushed or blamed for something, or we don't feel it's just that we're being blamed for something, we get angry. In this particular passage, the people in Nazareth are reacting strongly to Jesus after he reminds them about God's mighty acts outside the boundaries of their ancestors. Mark Davis, who blogs at Left Behind and Loving It, says the word marvel, thaumatzō in Greek, has a long use in the Gospel of Luke, and not every time it's positive. So something's going on here.
Yeah.
And it may be much more of a people smart intelligence that explores this and gets to the bottom of it. So looking at Math Smart, we're going with the idea of the neurocognitive programs that run in our brains. So neurocognitive programs in social species, humans, chimps, dolphins, they've been designed by selection to solve this computational adaptive problem. And the problem is this. For a given choice set involving self and other, how much weight should be placed on the welfare of the other as compared to the self? So this is the program that's running in the brain when there's strong emotions such as anger. There's another aspect to it, something called kin selection, which adds a layer of complexity in that somebody who chooses to give aid to help in a situation or to look to lessen anger, maybe, will often weigh the cost to the self in order to benefit a close relative. Kin selection theory predicts that you should be more likely to undertake a risky rescue, such as saving a drowning person from an icy pond, if that person is a close genetic relative. And so maybe what's happening here is there's this kinship thing that's happening, and maybe probably what has happened is the folks have been expecting a kin relationship thing from Jesus. You know, he's been doing these fantastic things outside the kin network, and now that he's home, he's going to do great things. And he says, hold the phone.
Not going to do no such thing.
Exactly. Huh. So then they get angry. And then another website called The Inquisitive Mind has an article called In Defense of Anger, An Evolutionary Necessity and Its Contemporary Applicability. There's a quote from that. It says, societies confer a great deal of benefits onto their populations, for example, safety, education, healthcare. But to do so, that society must have a sense of order. Everything from the hospital you were born in, to the school you attended, to the job you worked at, to the cemetery you will be interred in, requires order. It will therefore come as little surprise that maintaining order within society is very valuable. And the theory is that we use anger to maintain order within our society to ensure future recipient of benefits. So there's some ways of maybe illustrating the anger and the response that the folks in Nazareth have toward Jesus using math intelligence, math smart, that there are some logical, hardwired things in our brains and ways that we order ourselves in our relationships to one another that got crossways in this situation. So coming at it from a couple different directions. One is the hardwired way anger works hardwired in our brains. And another one is the social situation of where the benefits for me.
So it's there's a lot of programming and the back and forth way, negotiations between different priority
right.
programming.
Exactly.
So and you could almost flowchart that if you were a coder.
Actually, a flowchart would be fantastic. Or code it if you know how to code it. I don't.
It would be the friendship flowchart.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I hadn't thought about that. Yeah, and that would actually be a good special effect if you could find that and display that for your folks. There is actually a program that was in one of the websites that's called the Welfare Trade-Off Ratio, WTR, with tiny subscript letters I and J after the R. I stands for self and J stands for individual. And the variable in that formula comes between the imbalance between I and J, the self and the individual. Self is looking for the best outcome for self, but you have some decisions to make about the individual as to whether you're going to try to get them to change because you're angry or whether you're going to aid them, give them benefits. So that's the social aspect of that.
Right. Well, I got to looking at that rage of theirs as a biological phenomenon. And so I went looking for the physiology of anger. So kind of the other side of it, and got to thinking about the adrenaline dump that happens when you get angry, and found a couple of articles, and one of them is at a site called psychologistanywhereanytime.com, and that one talks about the psychology of anger, and it has a section on the physiology. It includes the idea that when you get angry, you get these energy hormones, adrenaline and noradrenaline, which sounds like the opposite of adrenaline.
But adrenaline, noradrenaline.
Yeah. but they both increase heart and breath rates and the tension in your muscles in preparation for an engagement. There are a few other things that happen that maybe that might happen first, and then those dump in and give you a prolonged
experience.
State of arousal, as it were. And so I found another article that goes into a little bit more detail about how that all works, and that's at mentalhelp.net, and it is actually a website that helps with dysfunctional psychology and addiction and things like that. But they had this article on anger because that tends to go along with addiction problems. But so trying to understand that physiology. And that one goes into a little bit more detail about how that all progresses and what all the different hormones and enzymes and whatnot, how those all go in. And there's a little bit of overlap in the two articles. So I'm not sure if they were both quoting the same sources without quoting them, or if one of them was quoting the other without citing them.
Right.
But anyway, that's for a lawyer to figure out. So anyway, that might be something to explore and to talk about is to describe that elevation and that physical change that happens when you get angry, that your breathing increases, your heart rate increases, your muscles get tight and taut, mm-hmm. and everything becomes more focused.
Yeah.
So going on with illustration, think of a time when you got really angry, like angry enough that violence was in your mind, if not in your hands. Now, you might want to do an illustration where the object of that anger is, in fact, an object and not a person.
Yeah.
Like your computer or a car or plumbing or something like that. And for me, one of the things that I come up against is my iPad, which is... it's just old. It's really old. And so it's getting slower and less reliable. So I get really frustrated with it sometimes, especially if I'm already frustrated about other things. And I get so mad that I want to just smash it. I just want to break it over the corner of the desk so that it snaps in half. I have envisioned that, you know, and I'm not proud of that. You know, I'm not proud to have that kind of thing going on, but there it is. It's in me. And most people have had some experience where they get so frustrated that they just want to break mm-hmm. the thing.
Hulk smash. Right?
Yeah. Well, that's down the list, actually.
Oh, yeah, there it is.
So, anyway, that feeling that goes along with that is what those above articles are describing, the quick ramp up to a physical solution to your situation, an unthinking desire for swift, violent action against the offender before your frontal cortex can interrupt it and say, what would be the consequences of your actions?
Not a good idea, dude.
Exactly. So that's where our two intelligences today would be in conversation.
So the body would say,
the body jumps on it and reacts quickly to get you to survive. So your body basically says, hit first, ask questions later.
Right.
And so
the logical part of it would be say, whoa.
Right.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Is that the best option?
And you can control that response, mm-hmm. but it takes practice.
Right. Right?
So the literary example that I came up with, Molly has already mentioned, and that is the Incredible Hulk and Hulk Smash. So we've got a couple of links to a couple of trailers for a couple of the movies.
Do you have the one with the Hulk smashing Loki around? Puny god.
No, I don't have that link. But,
too bad. That'd be good.
I went with the Hulk movies. Okay, let's go on. The epistle lesson for Fourth Sunday of Ordinary Time, Year C, is 1 Corinthians 13, verses 1 through 13. Please tell me I don't have to tell you what that is.
You don't have to tell me.
All right. It's the love chapter. So it's the whole thing. And you get to tell people that no one is getting married today. But we're just reading this. And so that's all the summary I'm going to give you on that. Surely you know that one. So let's just go right ahead. Bouncing right out of the last segment there with
the physiology of anger,
I'm going to go with the physiology of love.
Well, why not?
For Body Smart. So I found an article, and this one comes from brainscape.com, and it talks about various stages of love in a relationship, from that place where you're Twitter-pated, you know, the overly romantic levels that happen when you're first in love. And then going on to long-term commitment where that fades away. And then what is it that keeps love going? And it's a change from in the early stages, in that Twitter-pated stage, it's a stress response, basically. Or it's very similar to a stress response in that you get cortisol and adrenaline mixing. And so that you get revved up.
And
the anticipation of meeting
your beloved
or the target of your affection. So increased heart rate, increased breathing, all that stuff happens in love as well
at that stage.
But then once the relationship is essentially solidified, then that thrill, that anticipation, the charge eventually decreases and is replaced by a different set of chemicals, the endorphins, so that it's less about the anticipation of meeting mm-hmm. and more about the long-term physical touch and contact and not just sexual intimacy, but that's part of it, but you know, just holding hands or mm-hmm. hugging. That release the endorphins that produce a sense of tranquility and well-being.
Hmm.
And so your love takes a different shape as the relationship goes on. And so that's kind of the physiology of the different stages in a fairly short order. I thought that was really interesting. So in talking about this passage, you can make use of that and, you know, you might be able to compare that to different stages of faith development as well. You know,
the thrill of
your first when you're first converted or have some sort of religious experience
uh-huh.
or are brought into the church or whatever,
mm-hmm.
And then how it changes
matures,
and how your relationships with others in the church and with the Lord. Change and become a sense of, you know, that
I know you
well-being and, mm-hmm. and contact and connectedness.
Mm-hmm.
Right? For special effect, though, changing gears a little bit to get people using their own bodies, invite them to join in doing some simple hand signs or motions on some of the key words in the passage as you read it. So, for example, whenever you say the word love, either give yourself a hug or do the heart hands, hand heart thing.
Mm-hmm.
Tongues shows up a number of times in the passage. So there's a sign language sign for speaking that's kind of
tongues,
kind of like that, where your fingers are kind of just rolling out of your mouth, like the words do. So mm-hmm. just finger arcing out of your mouth a little bit there to suggest the tongues. Faith, give a thump on your heart. Prophecy, might be, you know, holding the future out there in your hand and looking up at it.
Mm-hmm.
And knowledge might be popping your finger up like the light bulb going off for an idea. Bing, up beside your head.
Cool.
Right? So things like that. And a couple of those I have links for the American Sign Language signs that they might go along with them. Then I have a couple of links for people doing the actual signing for the middle part of the passage,
mm-hmm.
love is patient, love is kind, all that section, which might give you some ideas of things that you could do. And if you have somebody that knows sign language and could do that for you, that would be another special effect that could work and help you out with it. So either having somebody up there doing it, or it might be more fun if your folks are willing to get them
do it themselves. Yeah. Well, that's much more body smart for sure, because you get them doing it.
They'd associate with the other person's body doing it
right.
if they're watching it.
Right. Yeah. But that's a bit more eye smart. Because you're watching it.
Yeah, but it fires your body.
Yeah.
The body smart part of your brain.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, let's go over to math smart then. Love is the foundation of life in Jesus Christ, apparently, is what Paul is saying. And it's not necessarily so much the love of the beloved, but the love that's in action, the way we act in love toward one another. Paul is encouraging the Corinthians to grow up and be mature in their love for one another. So since love is the foundation, I got to thinking about foundations. My father was a civil and architectural engineer, and so some of the stuff that I was looking at was really familiar to me because of, you know, helping out Dad on weekends when I was a kid growing up. But all engineering structures have foundations at the base, and these foundations fulfill some objectives and purposes. For instance, you have a foundation to distribute the load of a structure on top of it over a large bearing area, so that the intensity of the loading, the pressure coming down from up top, that vertical pressure, is spread out over a larger area, which gives the capacity of the soil underneath. It doesn't punch through the soil. It just kind of sits on top of it. So there's a necessity for distributing weight, the load distribution. The other principle is to the load-bearing surface needs to be spread out at a uniform rate so as to prevent unequal settlement. You don't want your structure to suddenly list at the southwest corner. That would be bad. So you also want to prevent the lateral movement of the supporting material. You don't want anything shifting. And you want to secure a level and firm bed for building operations. So that's why this foundation is here. You have something that's set, something that's not going to move. So then you can then put this massive building, if that's what it's going to be, on top of it. Essentially, the purpose of a foundation is to increase the stability of the structure as a whole. So that's an interesting experiment or exercise would be to take those principles of a foundation as an engineer understands them and put the language of faith into them. So to distribute the load of living faithfully over a large bearing area, over time, over a community of believers, over a way of living in a particular time, in a particular place, what's that foundation that's going to support living faithfully? Or to take these passages from 1 Corinthians and use engineering language. I didn't actually think to do that until just now, so I don't think I can do it on the fly. But verse 4 talks about love is patient, love is kind, love is not envious or boastful or arrogant. Maybe you could say that love is steady, love is deep, love is load bearing. Just use some of the jargon from engineering to do that. For a special effect, this could be a lot of fun. If you have yoga blocks or any other kind of block, chunks of 2x4s, maybe somebody's done a building project and they have some leftover wood.
Cinder blocks.
Erect a pile construction made of faith, hope, and love. And so start it out by taking some of the blocks, take several of them and place them on end so that they're not horizontal, they're vertical. So the short end is up and the short end is down. And place them around fairly close together and fairly uniform together and label them as love or talk about them as being love. This is the bottom of the pile construction. Then take one or two other blocks perpendicular to those, lay them flat on top and label those as faith and hope, because that's what Paul talks about in this particular passage. So you've got all the love that's underneath, and then you've got faith and hope on top of that. And then on top of that, see if you can get somebody to stand on it. Maybe a smaller person, depending on how much you've done, or somebody who's brave enough and has a good sense of balance, because they're essentially going to balance themselves right in the middle of all of that stuff. Or if not an actual person, something that's got a lot of weight to it, like maybe a big pot of water. Actually build a foundation, but build it out of love and just use the engineering and architectural principles of foundation building.
Do you have a blueprint for that?
I do have a little diagram. It's a pile cap.
Cool.
So you've got the piles, the smaller vertical supports, and then you've got the cap that lists, that's on those, and then you have the pier or the whatever structure it is on top of that, and then you build up from there.
Yeah.
So you can have a lot of fun building this entire structure, but just make sure that love is the foundation.
Yeah, and be sure to practice it.
Oh, yeah.
So you know that it will work.
Right. Really, it would be a lot of fun to actually have somebody stand
yeah.
on that. I mean, that can actually include body smart.
So, yeah.
There you go. All right, let's go on. The psalm for year C, ordinary 4, or Epiphany 4, is Psalm 71, the first 6 verses. It begins, "In you, O Lord, I take refuge. Let me never be put to shame. verses 2 and 3 continue on with that idea of God being the deliverer and the rescuer, one that would come and save, being a rock of refuge, a strong fortress. And then there's a little bit of a space going on for verses 4 through 6, asking for rescue from the hand of the wicked, from the grasp of the unjust and cruel, because God is hope and someone that this person has trusted from their youth. Upon you I have leaned from my birth. It was you who took me from my mother's womb. My praise is continually of you. Well, this made me think, particularly the idea of taking refuge, this made me think of storm cellars or safe rooms. Those panic rooms that yeah. some people have in their homes. That's a place where people take refuge. Mm-hmm. And so I've got a couple of links to what storm cellars and safe rooms might look like. I also have a design for building your own. It's from Family Handyman. You can build your own safe room. This is the idea for this safe room is for shelter from severe windstorms.
Okay.
The storm cellars and this thing from Handyman are mostly in line for people who live in that part of the world where there are a lot of tornadoes.
Right.
I thought of building shelters because that's something that you would construct. There's some need for understanding schematics and building principles for being able to build something in which you would take refuge. So that's kind of the illustration I'm going with for that particular psalm. The special effect I have could be kind of fun. Find a lot of different boxes of graduating sizes, small to big, and everything in between. And then label those boxes with words from the psalm, like righteousness, refuge, deliverance, rescue, salvation, rock, whatever you want to use. However many boxes you have, label them. And then starting with the smallest one, define the word that you've used for that particular box, and then put it in the next box, next bigger box, and the next bigger, the next bigger, the next bigger, and keep doing this until you've inserted all of the boxes into one another. And then knock the box off the table, toss it around, throw it around, and talk about this being our lives being thrown around by circumstances or storms. And then open up each box one by one until you get to the first one, that very first one, and open that one and reveal something inside of it that's breakable. And talk about how each layer of protection keeps the center safe, and that is where we take refuge.
So again, this is something that you'd want to practice to make sure that...
That you have enough boxes that you're not going to break whatever it is.
Yeah.
Well, and the thing you could choose to have in there is maybe a glass Christmas tree ornament, because those break pretty easily.
Yeah.
They're designed maybe not as easily as before, but that's something that you could break pretty easily.
Yeah.
You don't want something that's super delicate and super
rare,
but definitely, you don't want something that's precious to somebody, exactly, but something that could easily break if you dropped it or threw it. An egg, yeah, that's a good idea. Because the idea is this whatever this thing is being cushioned by the layers, which is essentially the idea of building a storm cellar. Or a safe room is there are layers of protection. There's thick walls, and what is inside is important and precious and worth keeping safe. And so you construct something that holds it and keeps it safe, which is what the psalmist is looking for in God.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, for Body Smart, I was also thinking about the place of refuge, and for whatever reason, who knows why these things come to us, but I got to thinking about the old duck and cover program from
the 60s,
from the 50s, from the 50s, from the 50s, in particular after World War II, but before the introduction of the hydrogen bomb. Because that was much more devastating.
You weren't going to survive that one. Duck and cover wouldn't help with that.
Right. So
duck and cover would work with the atom bomb?
Well, it depends on where you are. If you're far enough from the blast, then it might. For whatever reason, again, I started reading comments about this, but there were studies done by the Army. On the destruction that was done by by
blast wave,
atomic bombs. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the blast wave, and the study they did studies of what happened in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and a large number of people were hurt or killed by flying debris.
Oh.
And so getting lower, getting underneath something.
Taking shelter.
Taking shelter could prevent some of that. Hmm. Anyway, so if you're not familiar
with the principle of sheltering from a tornado.
Right, yeah. 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 So if you're not familiar with duck and cover, this is in that period. And it was a program designed to particularly for school kids mm-hmm. to have a way to protect themselves if they saw the flash of an atom bomb, because it could happen at any time. And the idea was that you get under your desk at school and cover your head and neck. So there's a classic civil defense short film mm-hmm. about this, and it's called Duck and Cover, and I've got a link for it at the YouTubes. And so you can take a look at that. It came out in 1951. And yeah, so some of it seems ridiculous. Like there's a family out on a picnic and they see the flash. So they get under their picnic blanket and the dad covers his head with a newspaper. and the guy says, cover yourself with whatever you've got, even a newspaper. And in the comments, they're like, yeah, right, like that's going to protect you from an atom bomb. Well, no, not if you're right at the center. But if you're far enough away that it depends on the kind of radiation.
Right, right.
But alpha particles can't penetrate paper.
Get out. Seriously.
Yeah. And somebody pointed out that the ignition temperature of paper is 450 degrees,
uh-huh.
and you get third-degree burns at 150 degrees.
Wow.
So, yeah, newspaper would help in certain situations, from a certain point of view. So, anyway... it's a way to get into the idea about refuge and protection. Hmm. So some people will remember having gone through those drills, and if you have somebody who did that, then invite them to talk about it and what that was like, and so on. And you might say, yeah, it seems ridiculous, but here are some reasons why it might not be. And it was once the hydrogen bomb showed up, then it's like, well,
all cards are up
to that's not going. Then for verse 4, rescue me, O God, from the hand of the wicked and from the grasp of the unjust and cruel. I was looking for a particular situation and I couldn't really find it, but I was imagining being with somebody and somebody was trying to abduct your friend or family member. And would there be a way to intercede and break that up so that you rescue that person from the grasp of the unjust and the cruel? And I couldn't find anything that really described that.
Just jumping in and wailing on them. Yeah, well,
so I did find a couple of things. But I wanted something that would be kind of, here's a method you can use, step here, throw the elbow there,
right.
That kind of thing. And that, because that would be the body smart part of it.
Right.
So just really couldn't find that. So if you know a martial arts practitioner or perhaps a police officer that you could ask, how would you do this? And have that person talking about it in the worship service or tell you and you say it, then that might work. Mm-hmm. So that would be kind of a special effect. But I did find a number of stories about people who saved somebody from being abducted or otherwise harmed. So I've got one of a couple of kids, a 8-year-old and 10-year-old brother and sister, mm-hmm. who saved their 2-year-old brother when a guy just came up and snatched this child out of the stroller that they were pushing.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. just scooped the kid up and headed down the road. And,
wow.
And they took off after him.
Wow.
And kept following him until he realized, I'm not going to get away with this. And he left the kid and ran.
Wow.
So that was one. Then there were a couple others. There was also a story of a woman who was driving along doing her errands, saw a police officer who was being assaulted by a guy. And, you know, this guy's wailing on the police officer. So she stopped, called 911, and then jumped on the assailant's back and started beating on him and pulled his hand away from the cop's gun.
Oh, wow.
And basically saved this cop's life.
Man.
She, you know, it's this, like a 60-year-old woman.
Gosh. Oh.
And saved this police officer. So that was pretty cool. And then I did find a video on how to run a defensive maneuver while protecting someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a martial arts specialist who has a couple people acting out a scene. So there's a couple on a date or something coming up, and two thugs come up and start harassing them. And so the guy protects the woman and beats up the two guys. And then they go step by step how he did that.
I see.
So that kind of fits in. It's not much, but that's all I got.
Yeah, this was not easy. This one was not easy.
Yeah. So anyway, let's go on. The Old Testament lesson for Ordinary 4, Year C, is Jeremiah 1, 4 through 10. This is the call of Jeremiah, and it is God showing up and saying, hey, I knew you before you were born, and I planned for you to be a prophet from before you knew anything, before you were even formed. And Jeremiah says, how, what, no. I'm just a boy. I don't know what I'm doing. And God says, don't say that, because I'll give you the words to speak and you will go where I send you. And don't be afraid, because I will deliver you. And then he has a vision of God putting out God's hand, touching his mouth and saying, I've put words in your mouth. So this is a situation where that's perhaps a good thing.
Yeah, right.
Although later Jeremiah isn't too pleased about it.
Why would you do that?
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, God does and says, I've appointed you to be a prophet. You will pluck up and pull down, destroy and overthrow, build and plant. So for Body Smart, looking at that last verse, verse 10, have you ever done a deconstruction project where you're tearing down something in your house or what have you? Maybe it's a renovation in a room in your house, or maybe you're on a mission project or a mission trip and a disaster struck and you have to tear down some stuff, right? And we've had both of those. We were on a mission trip with a bunch of teenagers where we got to
avoid swinging hammers.
Yeah, yeah, too many teenagers probably for the project, and hammers swinging everywhere.
It's just a miracle nobody got whacked.
Yeah, taking down drywall and paneling, mm-hmm. and things like that. And then at home, we've recently been working on trying to
fix a shower,
and that one's particularly on my mind. It's a small space, about a one-person job, so it's kind of fun to do, actually. So, so I've been the one to tear down the fiberglass panels and then to tear down the tile, the ceramic tile that was behind that it was stuck to, and then the tiles attached to the drywall, which will eventually need to come down. That's next. But just that tearing down and hoping for the day when we get to make the turn to the building up part, right? So the physicality of that is that it's a strenuous lot of work to tear that stuff down, whether you're doing it just by by strength of your arm or with a sledgehammer or whatever. There's a lot of physicality to that, especially if you're somebody who's used to sitting at the desk, like I am. So that's kind of where I got into that, and the physicality of rebuilding will probably not be any less, and may even be more in some respects. But I'm hoping there's a little more psychological benefit in and positivity, if you will, to the building up part than right. the tearing down. It depends on what you're tearing down, though.
Exactly. If it's a moldy old shower, that's one thing. If it's a relationship or something, maybe not so great.
Right. Somebody's house, somebody else's house that's been flooded out or something.
That's good.
You know about that.
Oh, yeah. I've done that a couple times in my life.
Yeah. So, okay. So what have you got then for Math Smart?
Well, Math Smart, I was kind of struck with verse 5 and verse 10. Verse 5, where God says to Jeremiah, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I consecrated you. And then verse 10, I appoint you over nations and kingdoms. So what I got to thinking about in math or logical terms is blueprints, an important part of construction. It contains specifications, elevations, symbols, perspectives, units of measurement, and layout, just to name a few things. Blueprints contain all the information that you need to know to be able to construct something. The diagram is the building on paper. Also got to thinking about code in a program. You have to code up a program. You have to design the code for a program to get it to run. And some of those can be pretty darn complicated.
Yes.
And if you miss something, interesting things happen.
Yes.
We were watching a director's cut or some bloopers or something about the making of Shrek. And they messed up the code for Donkey.
Yeah.
And so instead of Donkey having smooth donkey hair, he looked like a chia pet.
Yeah.
Because somebody messed up the coding. It was just interesting.
Missed one line or whatever.
Yeah, and he was just, Bucky been shocked. An electronic schematic to be able to figure out how a building is wired. You need the schematic to be able to tell you where you can and cannot safely stick a screwdriver. So each of these things, the blueprints, codes in a program, electronic schematic, each of these contains within it what is to be. Whether it's a building, a program, or a lighting system. And those who are trained to understand the symbols and functions will be able to see the end result. They will be able to comprehend and understand what the intention is. Hmm. For Jeremiah, God has already seen who he will be long before the design process begins.
Cool. So most of your Math Smart has ended up being engineering.
Yeah.
So the practical application
of science and math. Absolutely.
Cool.
Yeah. Well, that kind of seemed to be the only in for Math Smart for these things was what's the logic here?
Yeah.
Particularly for why'd they get so angry?
Yeah.
So anyway, there you have it.
So make use of what we got here or come up with something else. There's 6 more smarts you can play with. So get out there and get busy, folks.
That's it for today's podcast. Please ask questions or leave us a comment on our website, www.morethanhearing.org, or at facebook.com/morethanhearing, or tweet us at morethanhearing, or email us at connect@morethanhearing.org. If you tried any of these suggestions, or maybe got an idea that you like even better than ours, please let us know what you did and how it went. We would love to hear how using this theory has made a difference in your preaching and worship.
Remember to check out the show notes, worksheets, links, and resources at our website. They go hand in glove with the podcast and give you lots more material to work with. Don't forget to subscribe using the links on the website for iTunes, Google Play, Android, or good old RSS. Or point your podcatching software at morethanhearing.org/feed/podcast. Help others find us more easily by writing a review at the iTunes store. And of course, you can always share the show with your friends and colleagues. We'll be back with another episode next week. So in the meantime, stay subscribed.
And be smart.
Sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.
This is a Whippet Good production.